from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. We're video streaming live and broadcasting from our studios in New York City. Today, the latest on protecting your skin by using two very simple nutrients, inexpensive, easy to get, can make all the difference in the world in trapping those bad free radicals from the ultraviolet light of being out in the sun and actually get more moisture in the skin. I'll talk about that and some new research from Dr. Gary Goldfaden and Robert Goldfaden. Then, I didn't have a chance yesterday to talk about curcumin. Curcumin is one of the single most important anti-inflammatory foods in the world. So I'm going to talk about it specifically to help those of you who are having joint pains and problems. There's new information from Susan Evans, and I'll share that with you. My guest today is going to do something unusual. He's going to show you the real science behind brand new evidence that the JFK assassination could not have come from just Lee Harvey Oswald. Now, this is no ordinary theorist. This is a leading physicist, a former contract physicist for the optics division of NASA, Goddard, and a developer of renewable energy sources. He specializes in energetic materials and detonation with the Naval Surface Warfare Center, and he was a research physicist with the Condensed Matter and Radiation Division of the Naval Research Laboratory. So he's bringing some brand new research to the table. Now, how many individuals does he believe was involved in the assassination? This will be interesting. This is a continuation of a program I started long ago. I did 68 separate programs on different theories involving the JFK assassination. But he brings a whole level of credibility to it. So we have a lot to share, and I will be taking time today for calls. Let's begin. First up, we know that our skin is susceptible to the sun. I was just surprised when recently, while doing a detox for a small group of people who wanted to see if they could be in a very serene, pleasant, healing environment, and through quiet meditation to come to grips with the issues in their lives, whether it was nutritional or something physical, emotional, so they could go home and start their life over in the right way, as many people have been living a life, but by everyone else's standards and everyone else's norms. And one of the people who came, I had spoken with long ago. The person's not old chronologically, but looks very old. Wrinkled neck, wrinkled skin around the eyes and the face and the forehead, wrinkled skin on the hands, thinning of the hands. And this person's only 46 years old. What caused this? Combination of three things. Living in Florida and just loving the sun. When they could remember using a sunscreen, but almost never thinking about what else would happen. Basking in that nice tan. And now, the consequences. It was not long ago that I shared this insight that we, as a society, there are certainly exceptions to this, but as a society, we only know the truth of our choices when we reach our destinations. And if one of our destinations is a stroke, then we pay attention to our diet. If one of them is a non-alcoholic liver that is scarred with elevated liver enzymes, then we pay attention to the fat in our diet. If we wake up looking like a prune one day, then it's, gee whiz, maybe I shouldn't have done all that sun laying as a kid. Now, I gave this person a protocol, and hopefully over the next 6 to 9 months, they'll be able to reverse about 90% of the skin damage. What can we do today, all of us, to have healthier, better skin? Well, I'm going to keep it very simple. I'm not going to go through all of the protocol, but I'm always concerned about those people listening who may not have all the resources and be a little frustrated if I give a whole laundry list of things you can do, and they say, well, I can only do one or two, Gary. So I'm only talking about now one or two, and these are not expensive. First and foremost, always take antioxidants and a broad spectrum of antioxidants before going out into the sun. Now, there are several ways of doing that. You can take tablets, capsules, hopefully vegan capsules. You can take compounding powders that have Hyorac. That's probably your best because then you're getting the full spectrum ORAC protection throughout your blood. Not just your skin and your eyes will benefit from that, but if you wear good sunglasses, then your eyes and the skin around your eyes won't be attacked and damaged. But what about all the other skin, especially the skin on your neck, which is exposed, the side of your face, which is exposed, hence the wrinkles around the eyes, the back of your neck, which is wrinkled, and your hands? That's when taking antioxidants that will last at least 2 to 3 hours, and then having a booster antioxidants when you return after your exercise. Also, you need those antioxidants after an exercise because you've created free radicals. This is really hard for a lot of athletes to appreciate because exercise is a double-edged sword. On the one hand, to our good, we enhance our digestion, speed up elimination, detoxification enzymes, all increased. We tighten our muscles, burn fat, lower our overall body index of fat. Terrific for us. We enhance the creation of relaxing, de-stressing hormones from the brain. Very important, almost like natural opiates. So we're kind of on like a athletic high for about 6 hours afterwards. The endorphins are secreted. We bring our cortisol levels down. All this is good. We lower our pulse rate. Now, the other side of the sword. Every time you inhale and bringing air in and exhale, you're creating an instantaneous positive air in, oxygenate the tissue, carbon dioxide out, free radicals produced. Now, the more you breathe and the more deeply you breathe and the faster you breathe, the more breaths per minute you take, the more free radicals you create. You also create free radicals inside the muscles that are being used. So, you end up with a double phenomena. Healthier in one tense and speeded up your aging process in the other. So you have to compensate, and the compensation is take the antioxidants before you exercise and after you exercise that trap the free radicals, so as you're creating more free radicals from your exercise, you're actually not getting older, you're just getting healthier. Hence, there's only one side, it's positive. So protecting the cell membranes and the active enzyme sites and the DNA from free radical damage is the number one thing that a nutrient I'm going to share with you now will do. All the antioxidants do this, but vitamin E in its different forms does it better than anything else. So if you're exposed to the sun, or maybe ozone, or chemical pollutants in the air, here's what happens. In order to protect itself, the skin already contains 1% alpha-tocopherol, the 3% gamma tocotrienols, all alpha tocotrienol, 87% is actually alpha tocopherol and 9% gamma tocopherol. Now, vitamin E, we know, is a lipid soluble antioxidant. It very easily, without any effort, will go right into the vital membranes of the skin cells and accumulate there to protect against damaging effects of lipid peroxidation. But people don't know what the tocotrienols are. They only have heard of tocopherols. Well, they can donate very easily hydrogen atoms, that's a proton plus electron, from the hydroxyl group on the chromosomal ring. This action completes the molecular structure of the unbalanced free radical, effectively neutralizing it. You took it out of action, so the free radical that otherwise would damage your DNA and make you older is not going to do it now. Now, unlike most antioxidants, vitamin E doesn't stop there. Normally, when an antioxidant molecule accepts a free electron from an oxygen radical, it too becomes inactive. But vitamin E has a very unique relationship with other antioxidants, especially vitamin C and alpha-lipoic acid, that allow it to continue protecting the skin. So both vitamin C and alpha-lipoic acid have had the ability to take away the extra electron from a used vitamin E molecule, effectively starting over again. Let's get another round through the body. Let's help out again. Even more good. As we age, our ability to hold moisture into the skin is diminished. The more we wrinkle, the more ultraviolet rays we have, the more our skin thins, then the more moisture leaves, and the less healthier collagen, which comprises the skin integrity, is in place. The more pollutants we are faced with in our immediate environment, the more our skin ages. Now, the GAMMA, G-A-M-M-A, tocotrienol, toco, T-O-C-O, tri, T-R-I, enol, E-N-O-L, tocotrienol, the form of that is a vitamin E that can regulate certain gene signals in the skin that helps prevent the damage that you would otherwise end up having. And it also, the antioxidant activity and the phytoprotection are not the only benefits. Scientists have found that delta tocotrienols are quite effective at slowing the production of melanin, the skin pigment responsible for unsightly age spots. And so that's very important. In fact, a recent study found that two forms of vitamin E are very adept at suppressing the activity of an enzyme called trioninase, a key player in melanin formation. So you want to get your tocotrienols. And I'm suggesting about 100 units, because the tocotrienols are 60 times more effective at quenching free radicals than tocopherols. So they're actually better by 6,000%. And get the full spectrum. Tocopherols and tocotrienols each contain four different kinds of molecules, alpha, beta, gamma, and delta, making for a total of 8 distinct forms of vitamin E. So you get that and you're protecting your skin. Now to the issue of joint pain. I see a lot of people who are always asking me, what do I do, Gary? I've been biking or exercising, and now my joints are inflamed. I've had to stop. If I start again, they become inflamed again. According to Susan Evans, in a really good article on curcumin, the current issue of Life Extension, she's talking specifically about her experience researching arthritic patients. Now, of course, we know that the common drugs given to turn off inflammation are the COX-2 inhibitors, and Vioxx was one such drug, and it killed 60,000 people, causing another 125,000 heart attacks and strokes. Aspirin will thin your blood, help reduce pain and inflammation, but it kills about 20,000 people a year in the United States because it can cause bleeding, destroys vitamin E, folic acid, B6, and B12, all of which protect you from homocysteine, which also is a killer. So you may thin the blood, yes, and prevent a stroke, okay, but then you kill the person with a heart attack. Doesn't make any sense. So now we look at curcumin. Curcumin is, in my opinion, one of the best single joint damaging protectors and healers that we know. And it works terrifically inside the body. If you have enough of it, I'm suggesting in the neighborhood of 400 to 4,000 milligrams. And what it does is this. See, when you're drinking alcohol, for example, and you're not getting drunk, you're just socially drinking, as most people do, what you're unaware of is you're actually enhancing what is called tumor necrosis factor. And you're also destroying vascular endothelial growth factor. And you're adversely affecting human epidermal growth factor and estrogen receptors and nuclear factor kappa B. Now, those are all kind of mumbo-jumbo science, but in lay language, what's that mean? Well, the tumor necrosis factor is destroying your cartilage and other tissue, and the vascular endothelial growth factor is promoting excessive blood vessel growth in inflamed joints and in cancers. And human epidermal growth factor promotes growth and activity of cells involved in joint destruction and rheumatoid arthritis and also in cancers. So the moment you start drinking, that's why you get a higher rate of breast cancer. For example, estrogen receptors that are adversely affected by alcohol, which it does, and meat, which it does, and animal fats, which it does, promotes the growth of breast cancer. And it also then creates inflammation. So just living a normal, average life is going to produce cancer and inflammation. Our normal life is a very unhealthy life. It's pro-inflammatory. So along comes curcumin. And curcumin, as we know, is what is in turmeric, which is what is in curry. And curcumin-treated patients had substantially less swelling and tenderness by as much as 50 to 70% reduction in overall joint swelling and tenderness and then a control group. So what is arthritis? It's a highly inflammatory condition, and standard treatment does not reverse anything, cure anything. It simply reduces the body's inflammatory response. It masks the symptoms, but your joint continues to be destroyed, and so curcumin can make a difference. So our nutrient of the day is curcumin. I'm suggesting that we not use non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. They're killers, ibuprofen. They may relieve joint pain and inflammation, but only by masking it. And the side effects, gastrointestinal bleeding, liver toxicity, allergic reactions, and all forms of these anti-inflammatories can end up killing you. I'm Gary Nall. From our environmental segment today, we have this. As many of you know, about a month and a half or 2 months ago, there was a lawsuit thrown out, dismissed by a lower court, where a group of organic farmers came together to sue Monsanto, about 300,000 farmers representing individuals representing about 4,500 farms. Well, they've refiled it. I'll quote this from EchoWatch. 11 prominent law professors and 14 renowned organic, biodynamic, food safety and consumer nonprofit organizations have filed separate briefs with the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, arguing farmers have the right to protect themselves from being accused of patent infringements by agrogiant Monsanto. The brief by the law professors and the brief by the nonprofit organizations were filed in support of the 75 family farmers, seed businesses, and agriculture organizations representing more than 300,000 individuals and 4,500 farms that last year brought a protective legal action seeking a ruling that Monsanto could never sue them for patent infringement if they became contaminated by Monsanto's genetically modified seed. The case was dismissed by the district court in February, and that dismissal is now pending review by the Court of Appeals. So they've refiled, and that's good. Now, next week, I fly up to Canada, and I film the largest organic farmer in Canada who took on Monsanto, and he's going to have about 200 other organic farmers there, and I will film their stories of what Monsanto has done to intimidate them, bullying them, and to harass them. See, because here's how it works right now. Let's say that you're 100% certified organic farm, but across the road is a regular farm using Monsanto's genetically engineered seed. And let's say in the normal course of migration, a bird eats some of the Monsanto corn and then drops that seed and its feces on your property and a seed sprouts. Monsanto will come in there and sue you. This is such a cold-hearted, ruthless organization with just ruthless people as policymakers. They don't care about anything but profit and control and power. Yet they're the ones that this president loves and takes money from and puts their people at the head of government agencies. So that's how bad it is. So I'll keep you up to date on everything genetically engineered. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a brief break and come back. And let me give you just a brief preview. We're going to go to our guests in just a few moments. But my next program will deal with the failures of our national intelligence conducted in secrecy and why our decisions across organizations and government and businesses are corrupt and how to restore integrity to our institutions by fueling public intelligence. My guest will be Robert David Steele, former clandestine operations officer for the CIA, and he was the second highest-ranking civilian in the Marine Corps Intelligence Division. So he'll be here. Then on my Progressive Commentary Hour, on Monday evening at 7 p.m., Obama's military legacy. It's increasing rather than decreasing the American empire. And I'll have on Professor David Vine, author of the Tom Dispatch Study on the Growth of Our Military Bases Around the World. He's a professor at American University in Washington, D.C. And also, we'll have on Glenn Greenwald and Professor Michael Clare from Hampshire College. Then the next day, the topic of my guest will be the various disguises of authoritarian power and its challenges to democracy. And I'm going to have two people you haven't heard, Dr. Diana Allstad, a former professor of humanities at Yale and Duke Universities. By the way, she was responsible for establishing their women's study programs in the 1970s. And Dr. Joel Kramer, a psychologist and philosopher and one of the early resident pioneers at the Esalen Institute. So why are we so afraid of authoritarian power? And why do so many people not challenge it, but rather give it a forum? We'll talk about those. That's just give you a little preview of some upcoming guests. Two quick program announcements. I just brought over another 20 of my shirts and some pants. Once a year, when I buy a new wardrobe for my lectures and filming and television appearances, I donate my old ones, always nice, to those who would appreciate them. One item to a person. You can come to our office at 83rd and Broadway until 7 o'clock today or tomorrow or Sunday and make a selection. It's just a gift. Hope you enjoy it. And separately, I've had so many people this week show up in my office unannounced wanting some help. I can only help those who are terminally ill and have a letter from their physician that they are terminally ill. I have six people I'm counseling just after the show today alone. Plus, I just finished filming this morning Dr. Peter Bregan for an important new documentary I'm doing on psychiatry. So my days are full. So what I am suggesting is this. I have asked all three of our very qualified health experts, and you can talk to them for free, to come in tomorrow and Sunday and today so that it's the summertime. It's a chance for people who want to come in to get some free counseling on non-life-threatening illnesses. These people all have outstanding backgrounds and have helped a lot of people. And I pay them a very good salary and benefits, so you don't have to pay them anything. It's free to you. So call them at 212-874-4000. 212-874-4000. There's four of them. And you can talk to them about any of the things you feel important that will help you. And they're good. They're really good, and they're all back from vacation. So I ask them, come in for the next 3 days, just so that we help a lot of people, because otherwise they're showing up at my office. And I always feel bad walking by someone, even though I've got a gazillion things I'm doing here. So don't just show up. Always call my office and have your medical background or your papers to give over to my assistant, so then that person can schedule you so I can see you, but only terminally ill. Because I only have so much time each day to see people, and I don't want to spend the time seeing someone who's got maybe an inflammation in the joint when someone else has got 2 weeks to live. So please honor that. So I have all these people free. Call, and Nadia's back also from vacation. She's away for 3 weeks. Call 212-874-4000. 212-874-4000. They're going to be there from 10 until 7 today, tomorrow, and Sunday. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. A I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to go to our guest in just a moment, Dr. Paul Chambers, physicist, former contractor for the optics division of NASA Goddard, and a developer of renewable energy resources, and the author of a very interesting book. I read it while I was traveling this week, Headshot, The Science Behind the JFK Assassination. But before we go over there, I want to go to Lou Anne Panessi. She's standing by, and she is the one who reads all of your emails, selects those that she feels would be most enlightening and appropriate for us and our guests and people around the country. So she's here to tell us what she has. Hi, Lou Anne.
Hello, Gary. I have an email here from Linda from Detroit. She says that she lives in Grosse Pointe near downtown Detroit, and she says that at night, if we're ever walking about, we have to take the long way around because there's always a danger of carjacking. And her question for you is, do you believe that living in the suburbs of Detroit is going to be sustainable in the future? They're obviously very concerned about where they live.
No. Let me explain what I believe will be, and I hope I am wrong, the most likely scenario to occur in the United States over the next 4 to 5 years, but starting in the next 12 months. So we're going to face this immediately. I believe that we will divide ourselves by our economic standing, and we have different classes, and therefore those who have the most power will be able to have very protected, exclusive compounds or areas. Let's call them green zones. Now, you have about 1,200 super rich people. These are the wealthiest of all wealth. That means they have from $500 million net, excluding property, into the billions. These individuals tend to have multiple homes in different locales, but they're also building safety compounds around the world. In fact, today I was interviewing an architect, a green architect, who wanted to apply for one of the one of my new homestead projects I'm doing, and I'm interviewing people. And he told me about where he's building homes for very, you know, wealthy people that are sustainable homes. It's interesting that some of the very most powerful people understand the crisis that are coming. Even if they've contributed to it, they don't want to be faced with any of the consequences. So these are compounds that will be away from everyone else, but in the cities, you will see them much like as you do in Mumbai or Calcutta, where you have gated areas where security are protecting the people inside, and then these mega mansions where people live. I think that you will see cities such as New York City, but not the boroughs, where you'll have very protected neighborhoods, concentration neighborhoods. But outside those concentrated neighborhoods, where you won't be able to get into unless you have an ID card, much like a compound, those will be safe. They'll have light goes on, and no one will know that there's a problem in the world unless you watch it on television and newspapers. But for the people living there, everything will be fine. Then you have your very wealthy, not super wealthy, very wealthy. They are the ones who have the yachts, and they're the ones who have the private jets, and they're the ones whose kids, you know, they spoil and they spend a gazillion dollars on, and they're always outdoing themselves. And they have their conclaves, Malibu, West Palm Beach, Naples. So there are about 300 such environments in the United States where you'll have anywhere from a few hundred to several thousand people living. Then you have your upper middle class of about 40 million people. This is the largest single group. They're almost exclusively going to be in gated communities. And they will find the gated communities that most are most attractive. The largest in the United States is in Florida. It has, I believe, 300,000 people living in it. It's the size of a city. And so they have 500 holes of golf there. They have something like 60 restaurants. But these are retirees, generally 60 or over, and they're upper middle class. They tend to be financially and politically more conservative. So their environments are protected. They have security. Again, you won't be able to get in there unless you have an ID. Then you have your smaller communities all over the United States, generally in warmer climates, rarely in cold climates, and so they're okay. Then you have your professional class, lawyers, doctors, engineers, architects, tenured professors. They're not rich, they're not poor, but their incomes will be impacted based upon if they're freelance or if they're working in a tenured or a good, secure position. They will be living right at the margins. They will be close to their clients and close to where the action is because they tend to want to be pampered and protected and have the best restaurants and theater. So they'll congregate into cities like Manhattan. So you're going to see the cost of real estate go up in Manhattan, the cost of rent go up in Manhattan. Why? Because you have more people wanting to live in a safe, hot, hip, creative, dynamic environment like London, Paris, Rome, let's say Singapore, Hong Kong, and in New York City. But that will not be true in Los Angeles, Chicago, Pittsburgh, and other cities that historically have been magnets for people who were professional, educated, and sought out the good life. Those will become more decayed. So Manhattan will be the ultimate beacon. And in time, there won't be any middle class in Manhattan at all. The middle class will live in the suburbs and come in each day to do the work. And the people in New York, the restaurants will be improving. Everything will be like a mall. Either you'll be very wealthy or able to afford Manhattan, or you won't be near it at all. So that's what's happening, and that's where I see the greatest concentration. But New York State will have an enormous loss of population. And I believe that all these major cities will lose. California's going to lose population. New York will lose population because both are business non-friendly, overly regulated, very costly, and they're going to just keep passing on the taxes. Well, the wealthy and upper middle class can afford the taxes. The average person cannot. In Spain right now, you're paying 21% tax, sales tax, on everything. If you're already poor, that means that 21% of everything you buy, you have to pay as a tax. Then you're going to cut down on buying because you're not going to afford the tax. Hence, the rest of the economy is going to suffer. It is a death spiral. Then you have your middle class. They're the ones who historically left in the 1950s and 60s to move to the suburbs to have more space to raise their family with what they were told would be the suburban dream. And indeed, for about 20 years, it was. They had safer environment, nicer environment. You knew your neighbor, and it thrived. Now the new ghetto is going to be the suburbs. There will not be a single suburb, I believe, in the United States that will not be in decay, because of a loss of social services and the amount of foreclosures that immediately become a cancer in the neighborhood, depreciating values and acting as a magnet for crime. Then you have your poor working class. That is a large number. That's about 100 million people. And those people are going to have no place else to live. They are going to be living two and three families in a given home. And as a result, there will be enormous amount of dissatisfaction. Initially, there'll be this radicalization, either going to the left or the right, believing that's the answer. It won't be. It's really irrelevant who'll be the next president between the two that are fighting it out. There'll be no consideration for the third party. The people don't want to know about third party independent thinking. They're locked into the belief system. Again, it's a spiral of death, like the sailors following Moby Dick. They were going to follow him to his death. And their death. Then you have the poor class. No one will pay attention to them at all. They will survive, much like the victims in any genocide survive in any way they can. They will be in the rubble of all of our ghettos. They will live by means that they can do day by day. They will be forgotten. They are the second largest group, but now the senior citizens are adding to their numbers, with 1.5 million senior citizens losing their homes just this year. So when you understand that we do not have one economy, but seven, we do not have one class, rich or two classes, rich and poor, but we have seven classes of people, and each one has their own way of surviving and their own style of surviving, then you're going to have an extremely fractured country. Right now, Luann, as we speak, if you were to look in Detroit, here are the cities that I believe are dead and will not resuscitate themselves. The cities that Los Angeles, Washington, D.C., Boston, and all but Manhattan and New York City. But each one of those will have areas that will be exclusive. The cities that will have no exclusive areas. And I believe that that Grosse Pointe will become a ghetto. Detroit, Cleveland, Baltimore, Memphis, New Orleans, St. Louis, and Oakland, dead. Dead, dead, dead. To the middle-class workers that once caused them to be amongst the most thriving and dynamic cities and with great places to raise family, they're now ghettoizing. In fact, all of those cities I just mentioned are now filled with decay and almost uninhabitable. We've outsourced over the last 30 years over 30 million jobs. I've been telling people all along about the most evil people in America are hedge fund groups and their investors, and the worst of the worst, the titans of mean, bad, greedy to the bone, are the wives and husbands of the equity partnerships. These are the people who have about as much warmth in their blood as a cold-blooded snake that is poisonous. And yet they control our institutions like Channel 13 and the Metropolitan Museum of Art. And they get their money buys them. Their money buys them a pass to the front of the line of being revered because of what they can do for the institutions. On a character level, you'd put them into a trial of humanitarian crimes against the world. But that's not going to happen to them. So here's what you have now. Take one city. You mentioned, I believe it was Detroit, correct?
Yes.
Detroit is turning off the lights. 40% of the street lights have already been destroyed in Detroit because of vandalism or lack of repair. So Mayor Bing decided that the best way of dealing with it is to cut out more of the Detroits at night when they need it, and you're going to see crime go through the roof. It's already one of the most crime-prone cities in the United States. Now, you have about 139 square miles containing 60% fewer residents than in 1950. So what they're going to do is try to congregate people into areas that have electricity. So how are you going to end up getting poor people to move from one place so they can have lights at night in another place? It's not going to happen, which means that when you turn off the lights, which they're doing, about 46,000, and because you don't have the money to upgrade them, about $150 million, just street lights I'm talking about, then imagine at night walking home and there's no street lights. Imagine what that does for crime. Cutting back police departments, cutting back fire departments, cutting back social services, cutting back centers for people to stay. So it means people are going to be out of their home. What is the average price for a home in Detroit now? $6,000. You heard me right.
Wow.
$6,000 buys you a home in Detroit, a medium price home. So that means that virtually all the families in that area live in fear, because who are the biggest victims of crimes when a city begins to decay? The people who live there. They're the victims of drug deals gone bad and all other forms of crime. Homicide in Detroit is up 79% last year. And that's a national trend. Now, you've heard of West Philadelphia, right?
Of course.
They have an area called the 30 Blocks of Gray and Decay. And it is mean to the bone. You don't go there unless you're going to get carjacked or you're going to get beaten or you're going to get some problem. They call it the ghost of squalor meets the future of Westchester Pike. That's a quarter of people that live in that area. They're middle class. Most are uneducated. Illiteracy is high. And the homes are in shambles. Social services are non-existent. So needless to say that you have a bankrupt school district, you have a lack of public services, and you have uneducated teenagers. What do you think that leads to?
More crime.
That's correct. And now look at Compton, look at all the other cities in the United States going broke. I believe that we'll see between 300 to 500 cities in the United States to file bankruptcy in the next year or two. So when you understand that our educational system has failed these people, we have caused the ghettos in these areas because of a lack of attention to their authentic needs, and throwing money at social programs which become bloated and inefficient bureaucracies is never the answer. Yet that's the only answer the Democrats seem to come up with, and the Republicans simply say walk away from the problem, and that's as inhumane and insensitive as they could be, but that is typical of who they are. So you're going to see, why do you think that there is another dynamic, a movement back to the land, a movement to shared homesteading, a movement to get back onto the farms? That's the next renaissance, and that's happening as we speak.
Well, very common question that I get on my emails is that people are saying that there are good reports now about real estate starting up again. So based on what you're saying, it may not be the right time to buy a home unless you're looking at homesteading like you're talking about.
Well, first of all, any person who tells you that it's the right time to buy real estate is speaking, unfortunately, either from bias or ignorance. Why? Because right now you have 5.64 million homes that are either delinquent by 30, 60, or 90 days, or over 1.5 million are in proceedings of foreclosure. That means you have almost 5.5 million homes that within the next year, year and a half, will be foreclosed on. Behind that are another 6 million homes that will be foreclosed on. The value of the real estate is being artificially held at its current level because once these people lose their home, they're not being brought on to the market immediately. You have millions and millions of homes that are being held by the banks and foreclosed companies because they want to bring them onto the market in smaller numbers. Right now, if every home that was empty in the United States was brought on the market for sale, it would drop the value of the real estate market by 40%. So it is not the time to be buying homes at all. Not at all. Now, farmland is different. And you have to understand that you can't buy farmland for investment purposes. You have to buy it for sustainable living purposes. Now, then again, who's supposed to be the people buying these homes? Historically, it would be a college graduate. It would be someone coming out who has an advanced degree, who has stability, long-term family relationship within the community, who will be buying money and spending money within the community, a dollar changing hands about 60 times. Now a dollar had changed hands only about 12 times. Let's take an honest look at our kids graduating from college today. The total credit card, debit card, debit of college kids today, almost $700 billion.
Wow.
The total car loan balances they owe, $730 billion. The total student loan balances, over $960 billion. You're looking at over $2.3 trillion they have, and yet, structural unemployment is epic. In the recession of the early 80s, folks without work for more than 27 weeks was 26%. Today it's 42.8%.
Whoa.
The true purpose of the stock market is to create a mechanism for capital formation to support the underlying economy. And it is not meant to create a gambling casino. The main mechanism is the IPO market, where young companies, young idealists, young entrepreneurs list themselves on the exchanges and subject themselves to greater regulation and oversight. Well, these public companies are attracted to larger pools of capital. That capital is used to grow the business cycle and create jobs, millions of jobs. Hence, it's called the IPO market. Well, that collapsed by 88% since 1996. But if you look at the tech companies, they're down 91.5%. So what created millions of jobs in the 2000 now are gone. What we should do, if we were at all intelligent, we would be giving zero interest loans to small businesses in every city, providing that they kept the money and the work in that area and hired people at living wages. That would be a good way to use $2 to $3 trillion. We would get that money back. They would build new jobs. We would get a whole new tax base, local, state, and federal taxes. We would have fuller employment. We could reduce some real employment by at least 40% if we did that. But we're not. All we're doing is the insanity of both administrations and all their individuals who work on their behalf of getting money to the big banks, and they're then buying their competition and creating derivative positions now totaling over $660 trillion. So when you look at everything we're doing right now in the United States is 1,100%, I repeat, 1,100% debt to its gross domestic product when you include in pensions at the state level that are constitutionally mandated to be balanced that are not underfunded entitlements, funded entitlements, and state corporate personal debt, we are absolutely, totally bankrupt. Hence, I suggest we be honest and look at the future and look at a way of getting ourselves from where we're at to where we need to be. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for your call, Luann. Luann yeah. Panessi. And by the way, Luann, for people, since we've been playing a documentary for fundraising on BAI, if people want questions that they need answered on ozone, would you give them your number to answer, please?
Sure. It's 631-504-6198. 631-504-6198.
Thank you, Luann. Now, I'm going to go to my guest one second, but just walked in the studio. I only have 60 seconds for you, is Nadia. Nadia holds a PhD from Albert Einstein School of Medicine, Yeshiva University, and she is one of the people, one of the nutrition authorities who are there to counsel people and to help them for free because I pay her salary, so you don't have to. Hi, Nadia.
Hey, Gary.
Good. Nadia, how much time do you generally spend with someone?
You know, it depends on what they need, anywhere from 15 minutes to an hour. It just depends on what they're coming in for. I would say generally about 30 minutes.
How many people have fatigue, pain, or overweight?
Lots. Most people coming in are, let me think, top issues right now would include things like diabetes, sleeping disorders. A lot of people have insomnia. They're coming in for that. Fatigue, allergies. It was a bad allergy season, the one that just passed. People coming in who are afraid of getting cancer, who are in recovery from cancer. So just a whole slew of things.
Do we have anyone who has been helped? I'd like to hear.
Yeah, I was actually able to get in touch with somebody this morning.
Who is it? What's her name?
In. Cindy?
Cindy.
Is Cindy on the line?
Cindy, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Cindy. Did Nadia counsel you?
Yes, she did. I went into the store and received some counseling from her for a host of different things.
And is the information she gave you helping you?
Yeah, 100%. I feel like a totally different person. And it took some time for, you know, how I guess you feel like you want to go ahead and get a pill and fix it. But it took about a week or so, and I noticed a huge difference in who I was. And I was capable of not being so fatigued, and I felt a lot better. My distension in my stomach went away, and it was wonderful.
Good. Well, thank you, Cindy. We have no more time. I'm sorry,
that's okay.
Nadia, but if anybody wants to speak with Nadia and the other nutritionist, call them 212-874-4000. Let's say hello to Dr. Paul Chambers, a physicist and former contractor for the optics division of NASA Goddard, the author of a new book called Headshot, The Science Behind the JFK Assassination. Nice to have you with us today.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
You are looking from a different perspective of what you are challenging. You're keeping it very narrowly defined, and I'll ask you just to give us your perspective. When you look at the official version, the Warren report that Oswald fired 3 shots, and based upon what you were able to determine from your investigation, what do you believe are the discrepancies in the official report that should allow us to reopen an entire new inquiry based upon what you have discovered?
Well, if you just try to take the the preconceived notions out of it, if you try to take the emotion out of it, and just look at it, you know, scientifically as you can, what you find is that it's impossible for one person to account for the physical evidence and the acoustical evidence and the photographic evidence from the assassination. So you can throw out the witnesses and just go by the science. And the first thing you find out is that the single bullet theory can't hold water. It just has to violate the laws of physics. That's why in my book I don't call it a magic bullet. It's not magic. Magic happens all the time. It's an impossible bullet because it has to violate the laws of physics. It can't do the things it would have to do to account for all the wounds on 2 people. So once that fails, because you've only got evidence for 3 shots from the school book depository, and because of the timing that you're locked into with the Zapruder film, if the single bullet theory fails, that means that you've got more than 4 or 5 shots. And once you have that, one person can't account for it. So immediately, just from the failure of that, you know there's multiple people involved. Then if you look more deeply into the evidence, if you look at the acoustic evidence, if you look at the Zapruder film, what you conclude is there is another shot, at least one shot fired from the grassy knoll. So because Oswald can't teleport and can't be in two places at once, you know there's another guy involved. And once you know that, you have a conspiracy with very, very high probability.
What, based upon your research, and I'd like for you to share what your acoustical analysis of the recordings from police and radios and removing the echoes and reconstruction and comparison, how many shots do you believe were fired, and tell us what proof you have?
Well, I believe there were probably, there could be as many as six or more shots fired, but we can say, I think, with extraordinarily high degree of confidence, that at least one shot was fired from the grassy knoll. And you get there from an extremely good acoustic scenario that was set up by the House Committee in 1978. The House Select Committee did an extraordinarily good analysis and recreation in Dealey Plaza. So they actually had people in Dealey Plaza shooting from multiple locations into basically sacks, and they had a series of microphones ringing Dealey Plaza. And they were able to match up the acoustic signatures from a Dictabelt recording that was made because someone had an open mic on one of the motorcycles. And they were able to match that up as it moved, as the motorcycle moved along with the exact speed of the motorcade. So that's one very good match between the acoustic records and the film record, which is the Zapruder film. Matches like that don't happen by accident. That's the first match. The second match, if you go by all the shot signatures and the timing, they match up extraordinarily well with the Zapruder film. You can ping the shot at frame 313, and it matches up with the timing of all the other shots. There are several shots fired at Kennedy's motorcade from behind. And because the timing of the shots matches up so extraordinarily well, and the speed of the motorcade matches up, those things wouldn't happen accidentally. So you have extraordinarily high confidence in the fact that when you have multiple independent instrumented records, in this case you've got an acoustic record coupled with a film record, and those are used in science. If you did an experiment in detonation or high-velocity physics, that's the kind of instrumentation you would have. You would have high-speed cameras, you would have shockwave transducers measuring pressure waves and so forth. You want that data to match up, and if it matches up, it's publishable. So, frankly, you have a publishable data set, and it has been published by some people in journals of forensics and so forth. But the bottom line, because the scientific evidence matches up so extraordinarily well, and you get the same answer if you look at the Zapruder film and you trace back using conservation momentum, you get a shooter at the same exact location as the acoustic signatures placed that guy. He's about 8 feet behind the fence on the grassy knoll from the end of the fence. And that kind of matchup doesn't happen by accident.
I realize this is purely speculative, but what do you believe would be the rationale for not accepting any of this evidence that was available prior to this day? And in fact, other experts have come forward with convincing evidence to at least challenge the official position that they've never chosen to reopen this and bring yourself or other people, of which there'd be dozens in, that can deconstruct the official story.
This is an open question. Why does the news media not want to open this subject? Why the government doesn't open the subject because it becomes an embarrassment for them? In 78, the House Select Committee said, let's reopen the subject, and the FBI closed the subject by going to the National Academy of Sciences and said, well, reanalyze their data, and they didn't say, okay, well, we can cast a little bit of doubt on this, which is basically what they said, and the FBI said, well, we don't have to reopen it now because there's doubt on their data. But if you add in the conservation momentum piece, is what I've done, that allows you to identify the weapon that's actually used. And you put all that together, it just matches up too well to happen by accident. And the probability is probably, you know, astronomical that those two things will match up. So why doesn't the news media, I wonder why the mainstream press doesn't either champion me or challenge me. Because I'm basically saying the laws of physics preclude the official explanation, and they demonstrate a fortiori overwhelming evidence that there's a shooter from the grassy knoll. And there's no way around any of that on any level, and yet I'm basically ignored by the mainstream media. I think someone wrote me up in the London Review of Books, and he has some good things to say, and then he also, you know, waved the wand and said, I'm not sure we can reopen it, blah, blah, blah. I wonder myself, is the news media controlled by the government? I don't know. What's your take on that?
Well, Dr. Chambers, I would look at it like this. We have interviewed dozens of physicists, professors, who challenged the official story of 9/11. They don't tell us what happened. They tell us what didn't happen. And they're compelled, based upon the evidence they have gone through meticulously, a whole group of over 900 are all PhDs, all engineers, all architects in the field, and yet the media has not once given them a single credible forum. So imagine now what they have come to. They're not telling us who did what. They're simply saying the official version isn't correct. And if the official version isn't correct, then why not open a new independent inquiry? In fact, even the lead legal author of the 9/11 report said that there were gaping holes and lies and distortions. So imagine then your frustration with that very same media not wanting to hear your official challenge to it. So now you begin to realize, gee whiz, then maybe it's who controls the media and how people in the media fear ever questioning anything about the JFK assassination, because not a single media, not a single one, not CNN, Fox, ABC, NBC, CBS, NPR, PBS, no one, no journalist there has ever officially said the information on the JFK assassination is incomplete, incorrect, and should be challenged, because then you would, quote, be a conspiracy nut. No matter.
Even beyond that, they ridicule anyone who says anything other than Oswald Act alone is systematically ridiculed, and it's scary to me. I mean, if they're lying about this, what else are they lying about?
Well, that's the whole point, and I can show you people from all different fields who will tell you the same thing. They have found gross discrepancies in official reports on the Bay of Tonkin. We now know that was a false flag operation, because that McNamara said so in the Fog of War, and also what officially classified documents. So a lot of things that we were told were absolutely one way turned out to be absolutely the opposite. So you are merely one person contributing a substantially important new piece of evidence, but you're not the only one. And I believe it's important that all of you bring your information together and then ask for an official report, and if not, then do one yourself. And if you have enough qualified people with important information to deconstruct the official Warren Commission report, then that will make some news, at least in the internet media and around other sources other than the official source. But I've read your book. I thank you for writing it. I feel it's an important contribution to the nearly 2,000 books written on the topic. Many are not of credibility, but yours and about 100 others are. Headshot, the science behind the JFK assassination. Thank you, Dr. Chambers, for being with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
He is a physicist and expert in optics division of NASA Goddard, and developer of renewable energies, and an expert in energetic materials and detonation, and he has a fascinating book. I'm Gary Nall. In conclusion today, just a few moments to raise a few dollars for the station in the 2.5 minutes we have left. We saved our program today for the last few minutes for this. Now, here's what I'm offering you today. This is my favorite product that I've created. I have 4 new products coming out over the next 6 months. By the way, my new shampoo and hair conditioner are, I've just approved the final ingredient list. Some phenomenally new, exciting things. And I'm not shipping any more of the old, because I don't want people getting the old and suddenly a new come out. Why didn't you give me the new? So I'm giving everyone the new when it comes out. In any case, this is my Power Berry Blast. This took me almost 2 years to create. And what I found everyone else was doing, they were putting some acai berry in there. Yeah, how little? 2 milligrams? 5 milligrams? Well, that's not going to do you any good, but the public doesn't read the sidebar, and most of them don't have anything in there. They just say proprietary formula. I don't care about proprietary formula. How many milligrams? Well, I've got 1,525 of acai berry. How about that? That's super-duper triple strength. That's the most of any product I know in the world. That's a sigh. Then cranberry, 1,500 milligrams. Goji berry, 1,475 milligrams. Red raspberry, 1,450 milligrams. Strawberry, 1,275. Blueberry, elderberry, noni, black cherry, black raspberry, blueberry leaf extract, Camus, black currant, pineapple, guava, raspberry seed extract, grape seed extract, aronia, melicarpa, bilberry extract, quercetin, they're all in here, mixed with in some stevia, and beet juice. It's delicious and very high ORAC, very high antioxidant, very, very high. I believe it's 15,000. So it's raw, it's all natural, it's 22 fruits, berries, antioxidants. It's the power of totally fresh fruits and berries, washed, dried, without heat. Nothing else. It's yours. Big jar, 500 grams. High, super high potencies of a natural food. That's it. It doesn't get better than this. So you want to do something spectacular for your body? Then take one big scoop, which is in the jar of Power Berry Blast, and put it in your favorite liquid and drink it down. I got one right here. If you're looking in camera, this is what I drink each day during the show. See, this is a quart. I got more than one in there. I got about three scoops, and that gets me through the whole afternoon. Power Berry Blast, my own invention. It's good, powerful, natural, tasty, nutritious, delicious antioxidants, and the power of all these phytonutrients, their phytochemicals, the polyphenols, everything is good, is in there. So how about that? What I'm not doing is telling you what it does. Do that, then I'm making a claim. I don't make claims, but you can figure it out. You just go to the scientific literature and look under a sign, cranberry and goji, and you'll know why I put them in there in high doses. Give a call to this number. You're going to get a great discount. You're going to get a jar for $79.95 instead of whatever it normally is, which is much more than that. Call this number, 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065 for your Power Berry Blast, and give this to yourself before exercise. Give this to someone who is trying to get back on their feet. Give this to your kids. Give this to someone who you want to give them the benefit of all this great berries, and they're diabetic. Not a problem here because you're not getting the sugars. You're only getting a small number of calories in here. I mean, small numbers. All right? So it's great for people who want low glycemic because they're getting low glycemic. Power Berry Blast. Give a call, 877-627-5065. That's all the time we have. Thank you for listening.